Because we are a new portfolio committee. And we would want to familiarize ourselves with the work that AXA is doing. But we would want to focus specifically on 2010. We would want to understand the organization, how it functions, how it is structured, what is it that you do. And also, we would want to understand how the country, in as far as your mandate is concerned, is prepared for 2010. What are the things that we were supposed to do? What have we done? Are there any challenges that require our intervention? Do you have enough resources at your disposal? What challenges are there? And also, we would like to get an update on the Lamete Airport and cost implications, as well as the update on the road infrastructure at airport. Now, I usually get in touch with the leader of the delegation, who's going to be leading the delegation that is going to be doing this presentation, before we come to the presentation. The reason for that is to be at the same level in terms of the information that we need, and also how we are going to be handling the meeting, because I don't want the situation where the meeting becomes and I've not achieved anything. Unfortunately, there was a bereavement in my family, so I wasn't available yesterday to go through that exercise. Where there are issues that I think are not very much important for the portfolio committee to focus on at this moment, I would defer those and only allow the meeting to focus on the important issues that are for now, and then we would make a follow up and set up another meeting. The committee is also scheduled for a workshop that starts at 11:15 to 16 hours. Which then means that we don't have enough time. I've been made aware of the fact that we have four different presentations. We will accommodate that, but we will then zoom into 2010 related matters and challenges of around those. We have had interaction with the Department of Transport. What we have identified is that when we talk of the the state of readiness of the country in as far as 2010 is concerned. There is more focus on the home spaces and lack of focus on the base camp. There are municipalities or district municipalities and cities that have been identified as base camps. And I am saying that because I've been a deputy mayor of Oku District Municipality, which is a base camp. And there are still challenges related to the extension of the airport and the upgrading of the Gamalake Triangle, which leads to the facility that is going to be utilized for practicing by the team that will choose to go to Oku District Municipality. That to me indicates that there is a lack of coordination between the local organizing committee and those entities that have got a mandate to either expand airports or upgrade the road infrastructure or do whatever, and we would need to understand whether that has been strengthened. Because when I was a deputy mayor, that gap was still there, and I only left in April, and I was leading that project of the building of the infrastructure in relation to utilities. So we would also want to hear not only about the whole city, but also the base camp, the state of preparedness in as far as the airport upgrading process is concerned. I don't know who's responsible for that, but for me, aviation is aviation, whether it is at a local unit of travel and which is to live on Ganja. But before we move forward, we are going to do a brief introduction so that we would get to know who is speaking to. And we will also introduce ourselves. I am Ruth Bengo. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I was born in Harden, in the rural area.
I forgot to mention that we're in the majority today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Anwar Kenny. I'm the Chief Director for the Department of Transport for Aviation.
My name is Mongez India, Chief Civil Aviation Security for South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Yohan Beelman from the Department of Transport, Aviation Infrastructure.
Monica Shasha, Managing Director, Airport Company, South Africa.
John Neville, Group Executive for Aviation Services, AXA.
Jason Shabanana, the Head of Security of the Limatom Airport.
Dion Clitter, the General Manager for Cape Town International Airport for AXA. Wendell Little, Toyota's News Agency.
Lisa Stinker from Report.
Siyabonga Mukwana, Mukwanazi, Independent Newspaper.
Cashel McKenzie, Mobility Magazine.
Andre Yodan, SBC Radio.
Abra Barbier, SBC TV.
Michael Hamlin, Ironhead Bridge.
And Troy Land from Fenwick. Chanel, I was here.
I'm Harvey Bisbee from Civil Aviation Authority, General Manager, Air Safety Infrastructure.
Gabby Stadler from the PMG.
Raja Azakani, Media 24. John Riedewald, Media 24.
Thank you. We welcome the media. Yesterday I received a call, I can't remember which media was. But what was of concern to me was that I was asked about today's meeting, but the focus was, is there any concern? Are you calling this meeting because you are concerned and worried about the performance of AXA in as far as 2010 is related? I could not understand how a portfolio committee would be prepared to call a meeting because there is a concern. Because the portfolio committee is at work. It is its duty to interact with the entities that are funded by the government and the government-owned entities. So I would want us to clear this thing of saying that we only call meetings because we are concerned about something. We call meetings because we have a duty as parliament to know that things are happening, and if there are challenges, we need to sensitize parliament that there are challenges so that the country can move forward, and we would want the media to also act in that fashion. The second thing is that I don't know how we could influence editors not to become our fortune tellers, but instead take what has been written by the journalists who were in the meeting as it is. Because journalists would write about the issues that took place, but editors would change and foretell or write a composition. I was taught to write a composition when I was still at school, being taught how to write a story. But some of our editors have this tendency of composing things and write the composition instead of informing the public about things that have taken place. And Parliament is a very important institute. And I think the media plays a very important role of informing the public out there of what happened in Parliament in a particular portfolio committee, not to write a composition. And please, I am begging you not to compose. And if you have written something and the editor is composing, it becomes very, very difficult. Because I have interacted with journalists. Many of them would say, no, my story was like this, but the editor changed it. Can we move forward? So, Ngabangu Tama, it is AMA journalists are going to understand that it is important for the public out there to understand the state of preparedness of the country in as far as 2010 is concerned, and the things that these trusted officials and members that have deployed in different areas are doing. which is what the public has to appreciate, rather than focus on selling it the newspaper.
Thank you very much, Chair. We always appreciate the opportunity to engage with the portfolio committee. And our history as AXA, which is only 15 years old, I am very proud to say that I've at least been part of the half 8 years experience with the portfolio committee. And over the years, Chair, I want to reassure you that we have had the greatest benefit from the interaction and the input we have received from the Transfer Portfolio Committee. And as such, we come here with no less expectation with a new committee, but primarily to highlight a couple of things in presenting our presentation to you, to say that we would hope that when time is permitting for the committee, we are almost 71% to 80% underway to complete our capacity and infrastructure preparedness for 2010, which would give us an opportunity with a new portfolio committee to take your committee through our infrastructure, our system. It will give you a better perspective of what we do and how we do it. And in addition, and more importantly for me, when the opportunity arises for the portfolio committee to join us at La Mercy, because the new airport at La Mercy has been by far the biggest greenfield airport construction we've ever done in the history of the company. Obviously, it's only 16 years old. And I think that experience of being on the ground, of seeing the type of infrastructure and systems that are on the ground, would bring forward to the committee a simpler understanding of what the company such as AXA does. Obviously, Chair, and through you, we apologize that we focus very much on the type of issues for which questions were raised at Parliament before, so that the presentation in front of you only speaks to specific things. However, because we also came prepared that you may be interested in finding out how ready we are for 2010, we have brought to you an update on all of the key program that we are undertaking for the World Cup. So for those of you who have the presentation in front of you, the presentation wants to simply answer some of the detailed questions that were raised by Parliament before. However, we will be taking you through, as the Chair has requested, our readiness for 2010. By way of introduction, Airport Company South Africa was established to develop and manage the country's 9 airports, and later on we took a concession contract for 25 years for Pilanus Bank, hence you see us owning and managing 10 airports instead of the original 9. The original 9 are the major airport hubs of the country, responsible for about 98%, if not 99%, of the civil aviation industry of this country, and I need to hasten by saying that our biggest airports, including Durban International, are still in the top 5 airports in Africa, responsible for the main thrust of aviation traffic into the continent. Our airports are our Tambo International Airport, for which we are very proud to have been taken the naming of the airport to our Tambo. We've got Cape Town International Airport. We've got now Durban International Airport. We're building a greenfield airport next to them with the purpose of closing down Durban International Airport in 2010, hopefully on May 1st, and to operate as a new greenfield airport on the 2nd of May 2010. And then the fourth airport, Port Elizabeth International. Port Elizabeth, East London, Bloemfontein, Kimberley, George, Uppington, with its longest runway in the southern hemisphere. We are proud to say that in our 16-year history, what the country will have in February next year is a transformation of the old, smaller airport that we have
during our history of apartheid. I like to say that history is often written in books and poetry, but when you look at architecture as in the buildings that we are sitting in today, architecture also tells the history of 8 people, and by next year, February, we will have at least reopened organically all of that old infrastructure to represent who South Africans are today and to represent the kind of market that South Africa's business and economy warrants for aviation traffic. We're very proud of that history. You'll see a modernization of Upington, of Kimberley, of Bloemfontein for some of you who have had the opportunity to participate in the Confederations Cup. You would have seen the improvement that we've made, that the improvement would come in the form of not only infrastructure, but we've invested a lot on customer service, because the outcry, not only from the media, which we appreciate to have today, but also through Parliament's input, it was very clear that South Africans, more so than our international travelers, were asking for a company such as AXA to provide for them not only efficiency in terms of operations, especially around baggage coverage and around security, but they were also saying that we would like to feel that end-to-end from the time we park, having struggled to look for parking to the time we get onto an aircraft, we start to receive the kind of service and goods that we can in South Africa. I think to a large extent, with the limited resources that we have, we have been able to internalize and to listen to all that input, because that's how we look at it. The reference by the media or the input from Parliament, we look at it as an indicator to us to respond to what our market would be looking for. And we would hope that with the progress that we have made, with the technologies that we have introduced, with the enormous customer service training that we have introduced, that we can go back to a time when a Cape Town International Airport could be rated among the top 10 airports in the world. And with that introduction, Chair, I would like to hand over to my colleague, John Neville, to take you through our readiness for 2010. The portfolio committee would note that after we realized quite early that because of the transport infrastructure in our country, because of the nature of a regional World Cup, aviation was going to play a critical role in the transportation of the flags of fans throughout the World Cup. And as such, we early on built our own model, a model which would try and is basically an input-output model, which would tell us the efficiency with which we, with our capacity as airports, our airline, our industry in terms of their fleet capacity, how quickly we can respond to the demand of the World Cup, as we receive input from FIFA and from the LOC about which are the clubs, where are they going to stay, our model across the opportunity real time to augment some of the inputs that are necessary from the aviation sector. We're quite proud of that model, which is now at a stage where, with some international partners, we're trying to expand it into a type of slot allocation system so that throughout the integrated airport system, one is able to, for example, program that if a team is staying at Sun City, they're supposed to fly out of OR Tambo to go to a game in Durban, and then they finish in the middle of the night or so on, because our airport would be like 24 hours operating. That the slots from one airport to another are so rationally planned that we do not frustrate the normal economic business of South Africa. Unfortunately, because we focused too much to prepare for you, Chair, we did not very much spend time on where we could have been sharing with you our sense of where the seat capacity sits today, which always, for any business of aviation, the key driver is available of seats from our domestic airlines, enabled obviously by the Department of Transport and Parliament on a policy to ensure that during the World Cup we can receive more seats from other airlines, which we think is important. We would hope that information you become acquainted with, so that you should be comfortable to engage with anybody on behalf of the transport fraternity to say that when it comes to those critical issues, you are comfortable that
we are managing it correctly. I would say that one of our biggest risks, however, leading to the World Cup, which we identified simply from managing business continuity risk, because as you will agree, along with all these wonderful plans and all this capacity that I want to emphasize, that the capacity that we are building, that will be finalized by February next year for operations because of the new airport at Lamenti. It really builds not just for the World Cup, but it is part of our program for the long-term infrastructure capacity that is required by the economy of South Africa. All we did when we won the World Cup was to accelerate some of them so that during the peak of the World Cup we did not embarrass the country. And I think in more ways than one, for people who flew into Owen Tambo, the initial indication of what you will be seeing throughout our airport is that we have attempted to the best of our ability to give to the country the type of infrastructure and service that we believe can befit the kind of country we are, dreaming about growth, dreaming about socio-economic improvement. The one risk, however, as I was about to mention, is aviation fuel. With all of our models, when we look at our efforts scattered around the country, just looking at AXA efforts alone, we have not, in this case, structured the smaller efforts that belong to cities, belong to provinces, but because we assume that in a market like AXA, when a pilot leaves an airport, it doesn't matter where in South Africa, where South Africa has got about 165,000 drones, some of them haven't even had an aircraft land on them. When you are in a crisis, normally the best place to try and divert to would be an AXA airport, because we are so regulated, not only by our Civil Aviation Authority, by the International Council of Aviation Organizations. People will then look at us to come and refuel. When we did our model and to benchmark what would happen at peak, which is the worst scenario, at the height of aviation activity in this country, because of shortage, general shortage of crude, South Africa may be faced with choices whereby, I think you've seen some of the debates in the press, where we are already highlighting much more forcefully to the cabinet, and we hope that your leadership will be supporting us to say to them, we are highlighting to you what we are already experiencing today, where if one supplier or a refinery is in trouble in this country, the general supply overall in the system of South Africa is under question. Now imagine that shortage, not only of refined, because when you look at the suppliers, you find out that it could be that your general challenge is of supply of crude oil in South Africa before you even get the different products that you're looking for, and before you even go and beat up Transnet for the fact that they are busy building a pipeline. A pipeline will only add value if there is product going through it. We would like to highlight before we give you the good news about how ready we are for 2010 to say, at the back of our minds, it's not just the issue of Eskom, which we hope that the government is working hard to support us to improve energy. But we think that from the aviation side, and in particular around the World Cup, we would like the best of minds in the country to look at how we supply crude and therefore how we supply the various products to the different users of this country, including aviation. We would obviously want you to always put a first in line. However, we realize that there will also be other essential sectors that the country has got to supply in terms of fuel. And it's the one thing, Chair, that I would highlight up front to you to say that in whatever interactions in Parliament with other committees, especially around energy, that the issue of fuel must never be forgotten, because it could be one of the biggest embarrassments when we find out that we've got the traffic, we've got the excitement, we've got the movement of South Africans and international people into our country, and then we start asking them to come fully laden from one area to another into our country. With those remarks, Chair, I'm going to request my colleague John to quickly just take you to the update of where we are on the capacity infrastructure side, such that we can reassure you that on that side, we are on track as
last leg, which is the Greenfield Airport at Lamenti, we are still on track. We're still planning on commissioning there, and hopefully on the 1st of May, which is a holiday, and then operating out of the Greenfield Airport at Lamenti on the 2nd of May 2010. After all of the testing and all of the learning from the Heathrow terminal first, so that we don't make the same mistake. And again, I would encourage Chair to you that your portfolio committee, when time is available, would like you to come and know as well. By visiting one airport, you'll have the opportunity to also experience our air and traffic navigation company ATNS. You'll see how air traffic control works. You'll see how the kind of systems that they've put in place. You'll get a feel of how we protect the aviation sector in the region. It's an opportunity we would like you to see early as a committee, because it will then inform you on how you could add value to us, because we are quite clear companies that no matter how much we drive value and we drive our output, oftentimes we are the people that give us an idea of how people feel and how people experience our infrastructure.
Ken, good morning. I apologize for the slide, or not even the slide, the screen that's up there. This is extracted from our May 2009 executive report for the Executive Committee of AXA. So there's lots of comments in there that are very much detailed and subsequently been either remedied or changed, so I apologize for that. But it's the only one I have on my system at the moment. The first one on the screen is the Le Mersey Airport at Kwazulu Natal.
So you'll have the hard copy of that.
What we will do is, before we will augment it and put in a flat and have it.
We would make a progress report for that.
So that's one thing we don't agree on. Because hard copy, because we mark the pages in the slide and write our questions and comments and also the follow-up. So I think it is because we did not.
Chair, we were asked to prepare for you on the following three questions that you see. We were not told that you wanted an update in 2010. The reason why we can pull a flag, because instinctively we thought what could happen if you asked us. We only focus on what we were told to prepare for you. And this is to comment on aviation security, aviation safety in terms of fire and rescue, and to just see the progress on Lamenti. So we have the flag of Lamenti there that we can go to. But we saw that because you wasn't here on 2010, we could give you an update on all of the capacity projects that we were doing. However, what we can do is to go back to this slide, because some of it will also give you a feel of the issues that we are preparing for the World Cup. However, we will only have two slides on Lamenti. But maybe by going through Lamenti, it will give you an overall feel of how ready we are. So maybe we should go back to this one check and then send the committee the broader list of other projects. Thank you.
Quickly through an overview of the Mersey project in terms of progress to date.
We've given you five areas of significant development at the airport. Obviously, the most critical one on there is the terminal building, which you will see is currently sitting at 20 days behind the targeted completion date. The target completion date you will see there is January 2010, and that's the target we're all working for, although the contractual completion date is April. So despite the fact that it is currently 20 days behind, it is not a contractual completion date at all. So there are issues that have caused that 20 delay in the past, the majority of which has been exceptionally inclement weather during the last summer period. And over and above that, we obviously had 7.5 days of labour disruption during the strike just now. In terms of that, it is a tight project. It always was a tight project, but we're on programme to actually complete it. And as Montel has indicated, that we will actually be operating it on the 2nd of May. So those that fly out of Durban on the 1st of May will land back at the Mersey Airport on the 2nd of May. Just in terms of the cost, which was the other element you asked us to comment on in your letter, again, we've broken down the project as it currently stands at 6.7 billion rand. To the various elements. The largest single element there you'll see is the terminal, and thereafter the biggest one is the escalations. Escalations within the construction industry during the progress of this job have in some quarters actually gone up to 21% per annum, and has been on average running at over 15% per annum. So we've been trying to develop this project during a time of very high escalation within the construction industry in South Africa. These costs are fixed. It's an EPC contract, an engineer, a procure and construct contract, turnkey. So the risks of the escalation and the risk of the delays on the project sit with the contractor, who's the LMB consortium. So the risks to us, apart from if we actually make any changes, are very limited. We did have, at the beginning of the project, and various members of the portfolio committee will remember last year, where we identified these. Before we commenced this project, we had to go through an environmental impact assessment and get a record of decision out of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism at that stage. We had a 77-day delay in the issuing of that record of decision, which meant that we could only start the job 77 days late. Because the contractor had already given us a firm bid, that meant that we have to pay an additional money for that delayed start and that delayed finish. If we had actually had a delayed finish, we would not have brought this project on completion in time for the World Cup. So rather than paying additional escalation as such, we paid him acceleration to bring the job back into a completion date for the World Cup. That raised the cost from the original 5.8 billion that was tendered by the successful tenderer or preferred bidder up to 6.7 billion. This, for your visualization, is the progress at the site. And to orientate yourself, this is north, and this is effectively south-west. The main runway, 3.2 kilometers long, parallel taxiway system, high-speed exits off there. This is the new terminal with wing piers for boarding and disembarkation of aircraft which are parked along this apron here. This is a multi-story parquet. This is open parking. This is the new main access road off the N2, going past here, and the main entrance into the airport is round about here. And then it goes on to the R102 is the other link through to the communities to the north of the airport.
Let's spend the next week here. The airport does look like an office already, and as we see,
national team ceremony. An aircraft landed on that runway on emergency, and safely landed, and it took off again later. So it looks like an airport, smells like an airport, feels like an airport. There are parts of it that we test. As they complete portions of it, we test them. But obviously the largest and most thermal risk element of it will be when we test all the pieces together and when we decommission and move all of our equipment and all of our staff and all of the airlines and everybody was from Devon to Lamesi in the 6 hours that we require, and we want to believe that the city of the Tifini, the provinces, they are all working with us to make sure that on that day they can be able to free up one route where they can allow us to decommission from one track to commission to another. But the project is clearly on track. We believe that we built in a number of days to afford the contractor to manage that risk of 11 days of safety. The way we prepared the presentation here was that if there were questions, we received those questions before we moved to the next element of safety and
Chair, just one thing to enlighten the committee. We have a separate working group we call the ORAS group, which is the Operational Readiness Group, which will be taking the new facility as it is effectively completed by the contractor. That commences in December in various phases. They will be working alongside the contractor in accepting those various elements of the project, and they will be training all the staff from December onwards through to our planned operational date of May. So hopefully there's no terminal fire.
Thank you, Chair.
We are going to take all the presentations.
Thank you, Chair.
Before we are.
We can then move to aviation security. I think for, which is the first slide, the questions being raised really were around OAS Tamu International, which is our main hub. Primarily because it is the one airport that attracts all sorts of goods and services, but particularly because we have had historically a number of negative experiences around and high volumes of baggage transfers. And in addition, recently, the incident on SAA2 around drug trafficking brought the attention to the portfolio committee that you needed us to give you a few answers on. Just to give you an update on it, I'm going to request my colleague Jason, who is the head of security for OAS Tamu, to take you through the legislative and operating climate for security. I think particularly for South Africa, it's important for the portfolio committee to note that as an airport, with the manner in which we have crafted, or the manner in which the government's legislation towards aviation security is laid out, there are more players than one. You've got AFSA, you've got the South African Police Services with their crime management and prevention, you've got immigration, it's got its own act, and they've got their own powers, you've got customs, and all of us, even the airlines, by law, have got different roles to play around ensuring that the entire environment is safe. It's very different from other countries where you find out that you don't have a plethora of state security agencies where you find just one uniform. You can go from customs, immigration, screening, and you see that the country has got one agency dealing with it. Please just bear with us to just summarize the context of the legislative environment, and then we will then go into explaining to you the improvements and successes we made in baggage transfers. I'm very proud of that, and I think that the new infrastructure and the new system are going to make the scenario even better. And then to engage with you on the issue of drug trafficking and what we have done in LAFSA to play a role in reducing that risk for the country.
I'm just going to give really an overview, high-level overview, in terms of how we're structured, in terms of aviation security in South Africa, Madam Chair. As South Africa, as I said, we are signatory to ICAO, which is International Civil Aviation Organization, which regulates aviation sector internationally. It is the UN organ which set up standards and recommended practice for aviation for member states. Standards and recommended practice. Standards in terms of what we call Annex 17, basically focuses on security matters. A standard means that we have to be compliant as a country. For an example, whole baggage screening. We have to ensure that passengers who are getting into the plane, they are thoroughly screened. That is the standard. And the recommended practice really it's a benchmark. It's something that you can do or you cannot do as a state. And then in South Africa, we are regulated by the South African Civil Aviation Authority, which they regulate the industry. And then within the Civil Aviation Authority, you've got what we call the AFSEC unit, which really focuses on surveys and inspection of all the airports. Because AFSEC, that's where we get our license to operate through CAA. Then at the national level, we've got what we call the National Aviation Security Committee, which is constituted of different state security organs, which is your National Defense Force, the South African Police Services, Immigration, Customs. As AFSA, we are part and parcel of that committee. Really, they drive a strategy and policy with regards to aviation security in South Africa. You then have a duplication as per legislation. Of what we call local airport security committees at different airports, which as AFSA we chair. That committee drives the security strategy around each airport, which is constituted as well. You've got different state security organs in that committee, and you've got also the airlines, because most of the airlines are the ones who are highly impacted. The other issue really is with regards to baggage pilferage. As you know that the AFSA plays a role in the whole value chain of baggage. Baggage pilferage as AFSA, we took it as no longer an airline issue, but really South Africa that we can't go on with the issues of baggage pilferage because it talks to us as a country, talks to us as friends of South Africa, and we have invested a lot of capital in terms of making sure that we change our infrastructure in terms of access. We create a facility for people who are working in the ramp handling environment. We've got strict service level agreement with the companies that we license as airports company. In front of you, I've just statistics for the last 3 years, year on year, from 2007 to 2008. What is quite interesting is that the worldwide benchmark in terms of acceptable level is 0.1, which translates to 1 bag pilfered per 1,000, because baggage pilferage is an industry problem globally. In 2007, 2008, an average report that we got from the airlines was sitting at 30 bags per 1,000, which translates to 0.15, which was above the international average. Because of the number of initiatives that we have put in place and the capital that we have put in place in terms of capital expenditure and operational expenditure, for example, in OR Tambo, we've got what we call the baggage committee that looks at the entire value chain of the baggage. We've also got the South African police services and the crime intelligence that work with us very closely. And we've got also the baggage reaction team that focuses on baggage. Together with the airlines. In 2008 and 2009, because of the number of initiatives that we put in place, there was around 18 bags that were reported, which translates to 0.09, which is below international standards. From 2009 to date, sitting at 12, which is 0.6. And the target for 2010 and 11 is around 8. The other challenge I think that we had to deal with really relates to the South African Airways number of crew members that we arrested, mainly in London. The crew center, previously it was managed by the SAA security colleagues. It's really based on the international practice, because if you are a hub carrier and your turnaround times, it comes to your turnaround times, we had a memorandum of understanding between South Africa and Louis that they had to manage the crew center. But after the incident, we were then requested to assist with the crew center. There was a task team that was established from AXA, South African Airways, South African Police Services, National Intelligence, and the South African Revenue Services, really to look at the entire process at the crew center. We also reviewed the technology that they were using there. I'm glad to say that, Madam Chair, that SAA procured new machine for that facility. And as Airports Company, we took that responsibility as from the end of March. And we're meeting on a regular basis just to ensure that if maybe there is infrastructure that we need to change in terms of access control, CCTV coverage, we do that. Thank you.
The next item is on the state. Members of the committee would appreciate, Ontario would as much have an interest on safety, because when you fly, it's all about safety. The pilots are fantastic in keeping us safe. The air traffic controllers are fantastic in keeping our airspace safe and that there are no collisions. But also on the ground, there are a number of standards and recommendations by Ontario on what a country has got to comply in terms of safety. But in addition to that, you would have noticed that as we were talking about improving our runways and our infrastructure to fit, for example, the AC-80 aircraft that was tested at Owen Campbell, along with it comes the obligation that when you want to service aircraft at size, you're supposed to have a particular size of 500 vehicles, you're supposed to have with a particular category of airport so many numbers of fire and rescue personnel, and they must be trained at a particular level. Recently, I think in the last 6 months, there's been a lot of press articles on the fact that AXA is not safe, and people have forgotten that since the advent of a jet engine flying into South Africa, touchwood, there has never been a crash on the side of the world from a jet engine. And in addition, for the 16 years of AXA's birth, we are proud to say that our levels of safety and our continuous improvement on all levels have been fantastic. I note, of course, that our regulator, the Civil Aviation Authority, which is also present here today, the auditor, just like ICAO, just like the Federal Aviation Authority of the United States, just like many other governments that do business with South Africa, when they need to trade with us, they come and audit how well we do. And I think oftentimes people are surprised that if within the aviation industry, they listen to how people look at what we have built for South Africa, whether it's on security or on safety, people will realize that the simple docks that you see at Owen Campbell that remove birds on the airside, that fly around instead of us shooting up in the air, is the most humane and innovative safety system that has been introduced in the aviation sector. It came from us. We work with our environmentalists. We augment all of the systems that ICAO has to fit our country. And I believe strongly that with time and with the kind of input we receive from everybody, we cannot fail South Africa. And with that, I'm going to particularly ask Dion Kluter, because I think the example of Cape Town International, which has been in the press, would be a good one to use as an introduction to the committee to the issue of safety. Dion?
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm just going to quickly take you through the regulatory model, as my colleague here did. As for security, for fire and rescue, there is a regulatory model at an international level. It's a different annexure to ICAO, which is Annex 14. Flowing from that, on the right of the screen in the middle, is ICAO document 9137, which is the Airport Services Manual Part 1 for fire and rescue. That then translates into the national model, the national regulatory model, which is the competent authority driven by the CA, National Civil Aviation Authority, and that they do via, we call CARS and CATS, but the Civil Aviation Regulations and the Technical Standards, which you can see subpart 2139027. That then translates, and I do apologize, the green is not that clear, but right there at the bottom we have then what is referred to as the Manual of Procedures, or in short, the MOP. John, can we go one slide on? In terms of the Manual of Procedures, there are different chapters that are very specific that gets evaluated and assessed every time the CA would conduct an audit, and this they do for the purposes of the annual auditing, which for license purposes. And you can see the respective chapters there. Chairperson, I don't know if I need to one by one, but certainly the detail is there in terms of the different environments that will then be assessed in order to make sure or to confirm that a particular airfield or aerodrome is compliant to the regulatory framework that has been provided.
In conclusion to the presentation that we have made, we are basically saying to the committee that a business like ours is highly regulated. And because of that fact, there are institutions and systems in place that audit us. We are 16 years old, but in that 16 years, I think we have been able to identify where our weaknesses are, where our strengths are, and we've also made tremendous improvements in terms of the mitigants that we have applied in all areas. I do remember 8 years ago when I took over as managing director, I had a black book of complaints on every other area of the business, and to a large extent with a great team and a good board, and I think a great support from the Department of Transport, we have managed to decisively manage each one to a point where we can comfortably say to you that we are a continuous improvement business, and that we would invite the committee, in addition to that, to come and visit our structures and get acquainted to what we do. But just one thing to show you how well we've been working on this issue. Of anyone else I know in the country, every 2 years, you are guaranteed that there will be a simulation of an aircraft crash at all of our airports. People will be flying at OR Tambo. They see an aircraft on fire. They see armies. They see ambulances. They see whatever. Because every 2 years, we not only say that ICAO requires us to do it, but every 2 years in our budget consistency, all of our airports, we test our emergency exercises. And in preparation for the World Cup, we've added other modules. We've tried anthrax, we've tried other things that are not necessarily as part of our set or safety. But just to ensure that we are not stupid enough to think that we are immune from some of the activities that sports events like FIFA could attract into our country. There will always be areas of improvement because you benchmark yourself against the best in the world. And I would hope that we can receive more value and more input and more directives, and we will continuously improve.
Thank you very much. I now open the opportunity for members to ask questions and comments. Honorable Ngene, followed by Honorable Faro.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry I am late. Maybe what I'm going to say has been said previously. there is what I call domestic theft that I haven't heard anybody mentioning it. The theft that is being done in airports. You put in your bag, your luggage, let me say, but when you get it, some of what was inside is not there any longer. How it happens, I don't know. So I want to know if it has to understand that if you are in an airport lounge, like business lounge, if you happen to leave your cell phone and go to the bathroom, when you come back, that cell phone is not there. And there's nobody who will say, yes, I've seen so and so taking it. It just disappears like that. That is my question. Has anything been done? Because how dare you leave your scarf, you forget your scarf in a bus from an aircraft to the airport, and you go and report, nobody has seen it. But when you went out of the club, it was in the bus, but nobody had seen that one. And then I wanted to know, I'd like to know if anything has been done. And secondly, the mishandling of luggage. You will put in your luggage, and when it comes out, it has no handle. There are no wheels. Something has happened. And I suspect that maybe they just take it and throw it and pull it. I don't know who to blame. But such things unpopularize the company. Thank you.
Honorable Farr.
Thank you, Chairperson. The mercy, John. First question that comes to mind after witnessing what happened at, was it Terminal 5 or something? Is there going to be enough time? Clearly to ensure that there's some sort of a dummy run that will take place to make sure that everything is in order for the particular time that you start. And that's the first thing. The second thing is that with a new airport like this, obviously there are a need to secure it in terms of some sustainability. I think I raised it with you, CEO, the last time you came to this portfolio committee, because with this new escalation, which is nearly a billion, let's call it a billion, by the time it fits, the billion bucks. My question is going to be, where are we going to recover that in terms of the future planning? I mean, is it not going to be just a major hike in tariffs, you know, every aircraft landing there or something, you have to pay the cost of that. And you know, I'd like to know what your model dictates in terms of that plan. The other thing which has been of concern has been brought to my notice is the whole aspect of getting fuel to that. Now, currently at Durban International, I think the refinery is literally adjacent to it. And obviously that fuel now must be transshipped from across the whole city, from one side of the city to the other. And, you know, I just wanted to know what your plans for that are. I think there's some innovative thinking, but I mean, surely we're not going to put in boats and tank it around to the port there. And then the other thing which I wanted to just ask you to get some assurance on, NY, you might be able to, when you briefed us, you gave us some assurances that a lot of these slots have been secured for you. But that's what it's about. The business of airport is getting aircraft in and out there. And have we got sufficient aircraft charters, companies that are going to be able to utilize that thing in terms of its current thing? And the last but not least question is, you know, what are you going to do with Durban International when this all happens? Is that just going to be mothballed? Is it going to be used as a usual? And if I could come back on the other aspects that they refer to, like security or fire, or do you want me to just cut the whole thing out? Durban International win.
Mine is to Honorable Gavin's question, so I would like to add on that one. Each time I check in my luggage, I'm asked the question, have you locked your luggage? And at one particular point, I felt like, why am I asking this question? Is it a license for the staff that works at the airport Why should I be asked that particular question? So the question that I'm then asking is, why are we expected to lock our luggage? Because when I put in my luggage, I give no one any permission to open my luggage, locked or not locked. When my father was teaching us not to steal anything, he was saying there is no room or any cupboard that will be locked. Because if my mother and my father did that, it would mean that we are being controlled by them. They are not teaching us good values. Then the question that I'm asking, why is the staff at the airport when we are checking in our goods expecting us to log as if when we hand them over, other people have a right to open our bags?
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think I will start with answering the questions around baggage privilege. And I'm sure that some of the parliamentarians would remember some of the statements, unfortunately, that I would have to make again as a premise. It's a very sad moment. In the sense that more than many economies, our country requires that we invest properly, we grow aviation, we become more efficient to ensure that the connectivity for our businesses and for our people can happen swiftly so that we can be able to do effective business and therefore grow our economy and support our growth. And at times, I would wish it was possible for me to create 10 islands outside of South Africa. 10 islands of people who live east, sleep at the airport. They interact with no one. They can't take everything out. And it's a big wall. What I'm trying to highlight, Chair, is the dilemma of every time that you arrest people because you've got so many teams on the ground. You find out that your goods that they steal go back to their homes and their communities and they are being sold and the whole community supports it. The problem, Chair, is a national problem of all of us being anti any form of personal violation and theft. To a large extent, we manage it. We have introduced competition. We have suspended the fact that if you read or if you check on your TV, on programs on the EU and the kind of obligations they have on baggage, and I think recently they were even proposing that they will have a special team or compliance unit that simply looks at how airlines manage your luggage. We have said it as AXA. The community in South Africa has told us they don't care anymore that it's an airline. AXA will do something. And we've done that. We introduce competition. We are paying teams that literally up and above the airlines go in the baggage area. They go and look at the bags. And for that staff member who says to a passenger, and sorry that it happens, maybe not the right word, probably it's their own attempt to say to the passenger, there are certain elements that you can help us with to bring this thing to a stop. Maybe by how you pack, by how you secure your luggage, you also help us, you know, take a step forward in terms of turning people out. I apologize that it often doesn't come well, but at times when I hear that at a checkpoint, a staff member asks the passenger to lock, I say, I'm happy that the staff realizes that. As much as we're trying to educate them, we want to also get to the stage where we can engage the passenger to say, the problem is there. It is even said that we look at 8 per 1,000 And when you look at the numbers, it says it's okay. But it is not okay because there's too many banks. We need to get to a point where we as South Africans know that whatever item it is that gets stolen anyway, it could never be sold to us, and it could never come to my house if it's my son. And it's a campaign that I always believe we have to take into our hands as a nation so that we don't almost, I expect that for the 20 you fire, when you have to go and rehire, you've got to go to some other island or you've got to put them through 600 loops and to retrain them. We make our efforts, we say that time, but I believe that we are in the right direction. We just need to have a bigger campaign that shines stealing from anybody. The way you check, I think your parents and our parents have tried to get us to do so. However, the main issue still rests. Even with that in mind, what are you guys as AFSA doing? Because theft in luggage and mishandling of luggage happens. But simply looking at the law says that when that happens, you should be able to immediately complain to your airline. We know that most of the passengers would say that it's a winded process. What we've done is AFSA, we have come up with a number of platforms where our AFSA team will assist every passenger to make sure that the complaint is looked at and that the airline is able to deal with it because we will gather that information for them. And the good thing today, Chair, is that for as long as your luggage has touched our system, for as long as your bag has been put on AFSA's budget management system, real time, on time, we know where your bag is. If it gets removed somewhere along the system that is still within AFSA, we will tell you at the following minute, at the following time, your bag went off, we'll ask that shift. We've got reaction teams on the floor. And if, unfortunately, we end up just firing people and then they bring others to the force. But I've also realized that because there have been so many people experiencing theft in luggage, they don't even bother complaining anymore. For example, we don't know that maybe we have closed one area. They are shifting somewhere else and that they are taking new things. We have, as AFSA, no option but to find an easier way that you are enabled to actually complain. Because it is when you tell us where it happened, when it happened, because our systems today tell us real time what happened to your bag. Unless it is tampered with in the belly of the aircraft, because aircraft differ, or along the way, but if they do that and we can see the trend, we will then shift and add another element to it. We are only as smart as you enable us to be with information. And I would encourage you to give it to us. We actually put teams together. We don't bother anymore about whether that is a job to be done by so-and-so and so-and-so. We pay for them. They are there. They are great people. And I would love to make sure that we expand in the other areas. There is absolutely no way that I could even be proud of 8,000. And when I hear that in the sending of luggage, at times, for the cases that I have seen, because I also reply to complaints as ending, I would find that if South Africans receive his bag or her bag damage, but because we also feel that we are the ones that are there, the first thing is to blame that it happened in South Africa. In most cases in international travel, we do find out that when the bag arrived on our system, it already had a problem. But because we've got real-time data, we can at least look at it, find out where how the bag has traveled. And because airports today have got similar systems, if it is you travel through an airport that has got similar systems as us, they also check real-time, we talk to one another, and we are able to have an airline look at the issue and be able to at least replace your bag or at least fix it or try by a means to make you feel better. The challenge is still there for us as an industry. It's simply very much violating, and there is no way, Chair, that I can hide behind it except to say we, even those numbers, I would hope looked at other ways to close the gap. And I think together with such intelligence and whatever, if all of the state security agencies would come along with us, I think, I don't want to believe that it could ever create islands, but I want to believe that with the effort that we are making and the focus, it must, you must feel better that you have been looked after and that your items are better secured than before. And that's probably what we strive for, that you have the faith and confidence that with all the infrastructure, the training of people and teams on the ground, you are being looked after. And that is something that we would like to achieve. Is still too much. And on the issues of Mr. Fowler,
I think there is a follow-up question.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want just to make a follow-up on the responses that have been provided with regards to the baggage depth. That as a passenger, you have to indicate where does the incident happen. I think I thought that some of the reasons that make people not to report are these long processes. Because really, if I'm from Cape Town, I check my baggage in Cape Town Airport, I'm going to Nelspruit. Then when my bag arrives in Nelspruit, then I realize that there's something that is missing in my bag. Then how to detect where does that incident took place? Because I check my bag in Cape Town, it goes to Joburg, then from Joburg to Nelspruit. I think that is one of the reasons that makes people just stay with it. Although it's very much painful to do that. But Chair, maybe to check with AXA, if really they are taking this matter very seriously. Since this incident has been happening, how many people have been charged and fired? So that at the end of the day, really, because if it's a national problem, we can't talk of a national problem forever. There's a need for a solution. If there's a problem, the problem must be resolved. Are there any people that have been charged with regards to budget theft or whatever?
I also want to make a follow-up on that. I agree with the response that it's a social problem. It relates to the community that would affect people that are stealing from the bags of the passengers. And then the community at large would buy. So those that are stealing have got the market. That requires a response from the community side, in line with the call of the president of dealing with issues of crime. We can't ignore that and say it is only the responsibility of those that are employed. The community also has a responsibility of uprooting them, of closing the market. There should be no market for people who are selling the stolen goods. Instead of buying, you should apprehend and call the police. That is the responsibility, because we are also public representatives here. And if we are given this kind of information, it then enables us to get it down to our constituencies to say that what assists the problem, those that are stealing, to continue stealing, is that the community is providing them a market for stolen goods, and it is not playing its role of reducing crime. But I think that we still need to be clarified. You see, the person who was asking me if I have locked my bag said, I am South African Airways. You are checking in at South African Airways, but the luggage is going
going to move on this belt and it gets handled by a different company. That is what I would want to be clarified on. Which company is responsible for making sure that the luggage is safe? If I hand my bag over to a South African Airways employee and then it moves from the South African Airways employee to another employee, what is the relationship? And are the systems that have been put talking to each other? Because I don't know who's doing. Is it a South African Airways employee or an airport company employee? Do you outsource the people that are handling luggage? Is it an outsourced job? And if that is the case, where exactly the problem comes from? Because we can talk about a reduced number, but we need to get to the bottom of the problem. Where does it occur? And what systems have been put in place to reduce the problem? But also, I think there is a positive aspect in your report, because the statistics are going down, which is what we would want the media to carry out and report about. That we discussed this matter, and one of the issues that is coming out is that although it is a problem, but it is a problem that is being managed. The statistics are going down because what people read about is what they believe. And sometimes the problems are blown out of proportion. And the people that would assist us to report on the real issue in the media.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to try and attempt to respond to a number of issues that have raised, and I think you correctly pointed out in closing the statistics that are going down. Maybe I should go a bit back when we pre-94 and explain that in pre-94 we had 12 international carriers flying into the country. Post-94 it went up to 72 international carriers. The growth in aviation and the amount of operational expertise required to move us forward has been phenomenal. And the growth in terms of staffing complement has also grown tremendously on the airports around the country. AXA inherited a process where there were existing ground handlers and existing operational personnel handling baggages at the airports. And these have come across from the old SAA days, the old Transnet days, the old Swissport era in the country. And as such, there was very little control put in place in terms of managing these people. One would take note that at least 2 to 3 years ago, AXA addressed this problem head on by going out on a full comprehensive tender process. But building up to the tender process, there was an evaluation exercise done in terms of what control mechanisms must AXA put in the licensing conditions for those respective ground handlers. Now, when I talk about ground handlers, the way the industry operates is that AXA does not move your bags into the aircraft or out of the aircraft. If you're an airline operating at an AXA airport, or any airport for that matter, you would contract a ground handler to do all the technical services around your aircraft, putting water, draining the toilets, loading the baggage, parking the aircraft. Yes, that's a direct contractual arrangement between the ground handler and the airline, not AXA. However, they operate at AXA airports. Hence the requirement for AXA to put into the licensing conditions very stringent mechanisms to control and to ensure that those companies start addressing the core problem. I think one can see in these statistics that there is a direct impact by the statistics being by the numbers being decreased as such. And these new licenses came about in 2007. And if you look at 2007, 2008, 2009, there's a continuous program to manage the figures coming down. Yes, one would love to have it at zero. However, we must understand that we operate in an environment where we have thousands of aircraft movements per annum and hundreds and thousands of baggage transported per month at the various airports. I heard one honorable member refer to domestic theft. Now, when we talk about theft in baggage at airports, we must understand and comprehend that this is a worldwide global problem. And we're not taking the blame aside from South Africa and saying, fine, it's an international problem, we've got to live with it. But airlines, day in, day out, given the cost escalation within the industry, are trying to address this problem on a continuous basis. And when the head of security for AXA earlier presented on security, he made clear mention in terms of a collective approach by involving various stakeholders, including government agencies, airlines, etc., to combat this problem. Because we must bear one thing in mind, that when there is a baggage that has been perfect, inevitably, if it is reported and if there is action taken, the airline has to cough up and pay the money. So it becomes the responsibility to ensure that they address the problem. Now, with regard to theft, what we've done in terms of creative mechanisms, and some of the members that were here last year in the portfolio committee will recall when we were tabling the civil aviation bill, of which we worked hand-in-hand with the industry, with the CAA, with ACT and other various stakeholders, in terms of coming together with a mechanism that can address the baggage, post-region baggage theft problem. We realized that it's very difficult for a passenger who's flying from, say, Johannesburg to London and based in London, when the passenger flies out with the bag, gets to London, and finds that, oh, my bag's been perfect, I've lost a bottle of perfume, and I've lost a belt, it's not likely the passenger is going to fly back to South Africa to open a criminal charge for that particular product and such. And the way our legislation has been written is that the person that owns the property must be the one that opens the criminal charge for invasion of the bag and for stealing the articles and stuff. So it became a very, very huge exercise to say, okay, look, we're dealing with an international industry. How do we address this problem? Because the likelihood of people flying back into the country to start going head on and combating this particular problem is very remote. And in the new Civil Aviation Act, we have Section 138, which deals with a whole new approach to baggage theft. And what basically entails in layman's terms is that any person that works at an airport who opens a bag and puts his hand in the bag to try to rearrange the bag, or take a bag and put it up basically in point A and leave it in point B, or is found to be in possession of a bag at an unauthorized place, is liable to a criminal charge as such. Now that immediately removes the focus on the passenger and places the focus in terms of those ground handling companies that are contracted to handle the bags, that their managers, their security departments, their supervisors, their employees, in tandem with other relevant stakeholders, if they observe and they witness these transgressions happening, then it's incumbent on them to open a criminal charge on that basis. Okay? The Act has been assented to by the President on the 25th of May this year. The department is currently working on the program in terms of proclamation of the Act. Once that Act is in place, we are very confident with the collective support of AXA and the relevant stakeholders at the airport, then when steps are started in terms of addressing this particular problem on a criminal level, that you will see a more rapid decline in terms of baggage theft. The other issue that we discussed in terms of mishandled baggage, Madam Chair, to you, with regards to how, if I check in my bag and I get at an airport and there's a handle missing or a wheel missing, once again, we must understand the industry, and I think when the managing director of AXA opened up her presentation, he made clear mention that it would be nice to have the portfolio committee to do an in-loco walking exercise at the airport, that you comprehend and understand exactly. It's not I'm giving a bag to an airline rep and the bag goes directly to an aircraft. There's a whole process that happens behind it. And this industry is hinged on two different processes when it comes to handling baggage. In particular, international carriers utilize what's called wide-body aircraft, which are mechanized aircraft that take those big silver containers that you see at the airport. When you check in your bag, it goes to a conveyor system, then the ground handler takes the bag, puts it in the container, and it goes directly to the aircraft and thrown to the aircraft. The chances of the bag being damaged, physically damaged, is very small. However, when you look at the narrow-body aircraft, which you may be using domestic operations, it's what you call manual loading of bags into an area. It's like taking a bag and loading it to the back of a bus that you're going to transport stuff in. And your bags get checked in at the check-in counter, goes to the conveyor system of AXA, it lands. particular point. A person at that point, which is the ground head, takes it and takes it into a cart. From that cart, it goes into the apron, gets driven to the aircraft. You get another person taking it out and then putting it into the aircraft, and vice versa when you land on the other side. So the number of times a bag is actually picked, dropped, is immense. And that's the nature of the industry. There are corrective mechanisms. Yes, airlines do take the responsibility if you damage your bag or repair it, knowing very well that this is how the operation works. From a quality perspective, I am quite well aware that AXA has safety officers and have inspectors on the ramp as well as the CAA. And part of the responsibility is to ensure that there isn't any intended abuse where people actually pick up a bag and chuck it. So that doesn't happen. The wear and tear comes in from normal operational exercise and such. With regard to Madam Chair's question on, I'm questioning with regards to whether I have locked my bag, there's two issues there, Madam Chair. The one is the check-in agents are actually trained to ask these particular questions. They have a whole host of questions. They don't normally read every passenger, but they've got a program on how many passengers need to ask. And they ask you a number of questions just to test the concept. Remember, we're living in an era where global terrorism is large. Okay? And they ask you, did you pack your bag? I mean, it may sound, surely I packed my own bag, but they just want to complain to see, did you pack your bag? Do you know the contents in the bag? If you didn't pack your bag, somebody else packed your bag, and perhaps they may have slipped something in your bag. Have you locked your bag? Have you not locked your bag? And the reason they ask you this question is because when your bag goes into the sortation system, it has a barcoded label as such. And as the MD of AXA pointed out, that they can track the movement of the bag in this process. And let's say for whatever reason the bag does figure up an alarm in the screening point. Immediately you can identify and start talking to the check-in agent and say, look, you've checked in this passenger. Can you give me a history on what has happened? Is the passenger suspicious? Is the passenger not suspicious? So there's a lot of rationale behind why the airline staff operate in such a manner, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. It's very, very clear you are responding in a manner that enables us to understand what are the issues and how you are also dealing with them. Because when we ask a question, one, we want to understand the problem and the issue. Number two, we want to understand how you are dealing with it. And we also want to understand whether you need additional support and intervention from our side. It's not a question of us and them. We are not fighting you. You are part of us. We are assisting you to deal with the problems and the challenges that you are faced with. And if what you have put in place you feel is good enough, and we also feel it is good enough, we won't do anything. And if you feel that you would have done better if you were allocated this type of resources, surely then there is an intervention from our side to raise that issue with Parliament. So when we are asking questions, we are not asking questions to fight you. We are asking questions to understand the nature of your work and also the challenges that you are faced with, so that together we can facilitate ways of improving that situation. There were a number of questions that came from Honorable Faro. Can we take them now? Thank you. This one of has been responded to adequately. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Phil. The Mercy. Is there enough time for commissioning? Do we end up with a Terminal 5 Heathrow? The project was always tight from the very beginning, the moment we started it, and the Minister at that stage advised that we would take on this project. We are very, very confident. We have employed directly some of the best consultants in the world to advise us out of Munich. The contractor has employed some of the best people in the industry internationally to guide them through their commissioning process. Yes, it'd always be nice to have more time, but we are very, very confident that starting in November through our pre-trials, that before anybody gets near that airport, everything will be running smoothly, and when we start operations on the 2nd of May, road tankers per day. We have entered into discussions for alternative supply routes, either via a rail link or alternatively a dedicated fuel line. To put this into perspective, though, currently the uptake out of Durban International and therefore the initial demand at La Mercy is only half and about 40% in actual fact of that of Cape Town. Cape Town also gets supplied only by road tankers, and there is no demand. In fact, that we're doing the feasibility studies with the fuel companies at the moment to see whether it is feasible to put in a dedicated fuel line. So, yes, it is not a big issue, but it is an issue that we are continually monitoring to see if there's a better, feasible alternative to supply route into the airport. In terms of the sustainability, the members might remember that Durban International, the current site, is a very constrained airport. It has a lot of communities around it. It has some major natural obstacles to the south and man-made obstacles to the north, east, and west. In order to sustain the growth anticipated for KwaZulu-Natal, it would have been necessary to expand the runways, or lengthen the runways at the Durban International. That would have impacted hugely on local communities and been engineering quite a feat because it had the bridge over the Rock Canal. In order that expansion and creation of the longer runways and increased capacity would have still only had a limited lifespan because of the very constrained area of the airport. So the Mercy is a far better sustainable development area, and going forward it is obviously very sustainable. It allows for the additional growth down for Kwasi and
Stahl. The other side of sustainability, which is affordability on the balance. I think it would be naive of me to think that it doesn't pay me that I'm just spending a 400 million rand asset. It's quite heavy. It's quite a constraint. And as you ask the question, what does your modeling tell? The APRA Act ensures that we can only be funded through an economic regulatory-led model, which means that out of the 50 rand that is paid to me today, which is airport tax, I just want to emphasize that the hundreds of other money that you pay in the name of airport tax don't come to AXA. They are not for our infrastructure. It is remarkable that you're still paying 50 rand today for your domestic flight to help me pay for my loan to the bank for a 16 billion rand expenditure program. Says that next year the economic regulator will have to look at what tariffs are going to be commensurate for me to be able to relieve the balance sheet and to ensure our business sustainability going forward. I think it is important to note that one of the more fundamental changes that has happened in this period of capital expenditure is that we have had to build everything on our balance sheet without release. And then the regulator will only promulgate tariffs when those assets come into being. At that point in time, when we have had to squeeze 16 billion within 3 years in a climate that the cost of capital has been going haywire, it's been quite onerous. So the decision to be made following this period is by the regulator in setting the new regime is to actually remember that I've had to build it within 3 years without anybody giving me a release, without anybody allowing me to change the deadline. And therefore, there is relieving asset balance sheet for it to be able to afford the next wave of economic growth, as you well know, Mr. Farrell. For every 1% increase in GDP growth, our traffic numbers go on the average of about 2.5%. So when the economy starts to pick up, the last thing you want is a company that is weakened because it's still paying debts and their balance sheet is incapable of absorbing more capacity. But you know, the law has got an enabled economic regulator, and I think the regulator has got systems and is sizable enough to deal with that challenge of balancing capacity requirements and affordability of balance sheet. So from a sustainability point of view on the access side, I would look forward to a regime where instead of people panicking because we said 18% increase and forgetting that they may be moving from 50 rand to 72 rand, if not less, for the kind of enablement for this economy, it is something that I would hope we can educate and get the society to realize that the investment today in infrastructure is an enormous enablement for our society and improvement going forward, and that we have put our balance sheet open to that to be able to enable the economy that way. And when we want to be released, because that's the only system we have for how we can get the users to pay, that people remember that it is by relieving our balance sheet that the future can be sustained. And that brings to the issue of the Devon International Airport Fund. We would really appreciate all the efforts placed by government and parliament to ensure that we can offload the site. For a manager, you actually wish that the day you move to La Mercy, the burden of the DIA costs also go away. But we do also realize that the site, its location, being the only free and available site in that Devon Basin, is a strategic site for government for many things, and government is applying its mind on who would best be the one to take over that property to AXA, simply by investing that cash on us in that time also relieves us tremendously. But between ourselves and the department and everyone else concerned, we've been thinking without a box. Managers are hired to do that. We are having various scenarios about how we will be managing the business going forward. But what gives us comfort is that the capacity we have built now will live with us a little while, and then we are not fooled to think that South Africa is not going to grow again. It will, and it will require much more enabling transport infrastructure. And I think that we will be able to come up with a model, or we'll select a model among the ones that we have that will be good for everybody. But we want to sell the DIA land to some other government entity because of the importance of that land. I know there was a question to you about sufficiency of taxes. One of the things that we have to do simultaneously is to think about innovative ways to grow traffic, and I think we've just started doing our analysis. We'll be making input into the department, and I think together, at least so far, we've been able to explore closely that we can think without the box about how we grow traffic for this economy. If you think about the airports, what we would have built, the fact that we need traffic, and the fact that the economy itself needs it. We are going to be working smarter, trying to figure out what some of the countries are doing, to make sure that up and above looking at how you deal with the land, we look at where traffic is going to come from to make sure that we do not sit with assets that are just too big for the current market and that it takes us too long to get to a point of view where we start functioning at a high level of productivity, which we've enjoyed before. We also want to take pride in adding value again through dividends that allow governments to build houses and toilets and other facilities for our people. So those strategies are underway. We are reading from everyone. We're studying from the smallest country that to improve tourism, they've done both steps to attract traffic, and we will be making our own input into the department, which is really responsible for the frequency in various countries as a value add how we can look at various avenues to improve trust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you. On the issue of sustainability and some of the comments made by the AMD of AXA, and as the Honourable Member rightfully pointed out, the previous portfolio committee did have a briefing at one stage with regard to capacity in terms of air services. One must recall that in 2006, Cabinet approved the airline strategy for the country, a strategy which main objective was to increase capacity ahead of demand as such. The department has been extensively engaged in the implementation of the strategy over the last 2 years, and I'm pleased to announce, and maybe at this stage we can always share it with the portfolio committee in the presentation, that we have increased capacity by over 100% on existing capacity pre-2006. Now, what we have done is, in terms of creative mechanisms, is that in the air services agreement that we concluded with various countries around the globe, we have made a very concerted effort to ensure that entry points are identified in those air services agreements, which, in this case, makes mention of Durban will be an entry point for X number of frequencies. Cape Town will be an entry point for Y amount of frequencies. And we can already see the benefit. One would recall that fairly recently, Emirates Airlines and the Middle East are flying into Cape Town. Very soon, they'll be launching an operation to Durban. We are inundated on a daily basis with different airlines, different countries around the globe, asking for flights to go into Durban, in particular the Middle East. So we're very confident that from a sustainability point of view, once the airport is operational, and yes, it will be a world-leading airport in terms of its technology capacity, that airlines will want to fly into Durban. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Follow-up. Relating to the aspect that's been reported on. Is there any plans per se to look at the Mercy Airport as a sort of an niche airport for certain handling of certain goods and services, or is it going to be purely a mix of all, or is there some sort of aspect that you've determined there? And the second thing which I relate to, which you sort of, touched on, and that is the whole aspect of recovery. Now, there has been sort of comments that AXA gets most of its return from its rentals in its retail sector within the airport's facility. And the consultants obviously are planning for maximum return from that infrastructure. But needless to say, it excludes then some of the aspects of passenger movement. And I hear it referred to particularly to the World Cup and the need for having people to be moved dramatically out of those airports. 20, 30 coaches possibly per flight or more flights that come in. Now, what space have you allocated in those plans for those types of services? Because this is a very worrying factor. I mean, you've got the manager of Cape Town International here, and I can tell you now, from our last visit that we went there, we couldn't actually even determine at that point, unless they've changed the plan somewhat, where the coaches are even going to park to pick up those passengers and get them moving out of there, thinking that there's going to be 20 coaches in a line. It's an amazing sort of little thought as to how it's going to be handled, when the whole focus of AXA has been, in terms of what you're saying, getting that income from the rental space that you're going to be handing out to whatever service provider that's going to be in there. So I just want some general comments. I don't want to go, you can write to me or tell me about it afterwards, but I have a lot of questions about that have been brought to my knowledge, and I'd like to have some sort of guidance as to whether you've actually allocated that space or not.
It's a fantastic question, because we actually, it's the least of our worries, because the way we plan the logistics for all of the teams and for all of their plans, we've got a model whereby with the city, we want to bring in the buses. We are not using the similar exits where, first of all, it's important for everyone to realize that we have had plans for the 2010 Soccer World Cup, assuming that we will continue to facilitate South Africa's normal business to the same level of efficiency. And therefore, we have had to think about the best routing system for different types and criteria and ranks of World Cup passengers. Most of those that are VIP types, the flights, the whatever, You won't even see them on the left side. Their buses will collect them via a sign out, so that the coordination, which is the model that I've sent to on the floor, it will be able to coordinate from the departure from the stadium and when the aircraft is ready and parked, so that we can bring them differently. We tested that during the WSSC and a little bit during Confederations Cup, such that when you look at an airport, forget the fact that the way we are going to be working in partnership with the city, there's going to be a mass of buses sitting and waiting. The way we are going to try to do it is almost with the slot allocation the way we do aircraft. Flight so-and-so is coming in 2 hours. It's for Sun City. The load of buses for Sun City heads to a particular gate. When the aircraft have landed, get them to airside, pick up their passengers, go. So those logistics, we've done that before. We're planning on it. Also, I just want to emphasize that because of the way we are regulated, sir, every time you pay a tariff, the cost of it has been reduced by how much I made on the non-aeronautical side. It plays a big, big role in reducing the cost of the ticket, as well as to the airline. To the extent that our commercial guys innovate every day about what else they can do and not to rely on the tariffs paid by passengers and airlines, saying that when the regulator determines the tariff, the one minus number in these building blocks that you will see would be from non-aeronautical. So it's to incentivize us to go out of the box to think about creative ways on the non-aeronautical side because it reduces the cost of travel. But I want to reassure you, and I will let Dion make comments on Cape Town, which is going to make you feel so happy. The logistics are being worked on, but the layout of the airport and the road alignment that we spend money on are going to make this very possible for us. Dion?
Thank you. Through the chair, to the honourable member, I think the issue of landside arrangements at the airport is a very real issue. I think it's a valid question. And typically, in our experience, we've seen that those are areas that there can be challenges. I think the comfort I can give the House is that the time and effort and money that has been invested, particularly on the land side, layouts and designs have been very significant. It's currently, if you go to the airport today, with the construction, it's still a work in progress, so you don't see the full picture. But for me, what is really the strength of what we're doing at Cape Town in terms of the roadside network is not an AXA design. It was one that was done together with the city and the province as a solution because we understand that the airport is but a small subset of the broader precinct. Now, we had to plan it from a capacity layout design, and we had to understand where the different modes of transportation would be situated. We also know that the rapid transportation system is planned for the Central Plaza area, and then for the coaches we have a particular area, and then we have a holding space. And all of that, we, for the first time, I must say, Chairperson, early next year when we finish the project, for the first time we are able to separate what we call we have a primary and a secondary road system. The primary road system is for the use of our passengers and for people that are airport users and clients. And then the secondary airport road system is the one that is used by all of our support vehicles and all of the entities that work at the airport so that you don't have a mix between those two sets of traffic, just to ensure that it is convenient, that it's efficient, and it is safe. Also, no conflict between people and vehicles. It's all at grade separation. And I think we're going to be very proud of the final solution that's currently underway. It has been well planned, and it's well we're on track with that. We're finishing early next year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Chair. I just wanted to come back to the aspect of the SAA story and to just tap into Jason's mind a bit here. What is it that we are doing wrong? That's the first question. To lose the credibility we had in that particular instance by not using a universal, I go and travel quite considerably, use of dots. We were talking about a drug that was taken through here by crew members. obviously in a very slap-hazard and very, very loose security arrangement. And at the end of the day, if you go to most airports in Europe or anywhere in the world, they have a doctor which is trained to sniff out drugs. Now, surely the same aspect of that, that simple use of those animals can be used in terms of everybody that goes onto every airport in this country. That's my first question, why? The second one relates to the bomb threat that took place in February last year, this year. Who is in charge when a situation like that arrives? I had a 10-page letter written by a very, very angry, or number of angry, I think you even got the copy of the letter, passengers that sat on that flight and were moved from pillar to post with not anybody communicating with them as to what was going on when that bomb here took place. It happens in society. But for heaven's sake, can we get some determinant body, irrespective of all the work we did last year in terms of modifying the arrangements for security and CAA and what have you? The buck stops somewhere. And I promise you, the buck is at the moment being thrown at the people who manage the airport. Because you've got SAP there operating in isolation. You get the NIA operating in isolation. You get your own security checking system operating in isolation. Or so we think. But as passengers, we want to know that when we board one of the aircraft going through any airport in this country, that we're going to be safe. Now, can you give me some answers to that question, please?
In terms of the technology that we're using, I mean, the dogs is just part of the measures that you can put in at the airport. If I may just give a context in terms of the number of passengers who are arriving in South Africa who are carrying drugs from other countries, the number is staggering. It means in one way or the other they were able to pass through some of the European airport to South Africa. So what it says is that you know, you can have your technology, you can have your people, you can have your processes in place. Security is not a foolproof system. If I may give an example in terms of the number of bags that we're processing at OR Tambo, we're processing around an average of 20,000 bags. If we have to use the dogs as well, you can imagine the process, you know, it will slow down the process. We've got the best technology. The dogs is one aspect at the airport currently we've got about 900 police officers, different units that are operating there. You've got the detectives, you've got the crime intelligence, you've got the explosive unit that are based at the airport. So we've got enough capacity, if I may say so, in terms of dealing with the acts of unlawful interference. In terms of the crew center, if you look at the incident itself, you know, after the investigation, you'll see that it's a human factor element sometimes, because the screener can be able to look at the, you know, at the bag and identify an item. And if it loses one eye, it's a problem. It's a human factor element. You know, you can do all the vetting of your screeners, you know, in terms of recruitment and you know, everything. However, you'll always have a human element. You know, we're discussing the issue of baggage pilferage. Because at a certain point, the bags have to be loaded in the aircraft. And that's when you have people who are loading the bags, you know, having you know, free access to the bag. Some of the airlines, for example, will have cameras to be able to look, you know, like your BAs and other airlines. Some of them, they don't have that technology. Within the airport precinct, we've got a number of cameras that we've put in place. We've got covered cameras. We've got special operation for special flights. At the end of the day, it's a global problem, and it's something that you know we have to deal with it in South Africa. As I said, you know, the number of people who are coming to South Africa with drugs has increased tremendously, and regardless of the sort of measures that other countries have put in place, it's a global problem. I mean, in South Africa, we've put measures, extensive measures in place. However, you always have an element of, you know, a human factor element that is there.
And before you proceed, I think on the issue of dogs, given my personality, I wanted to get more dogs. And I learned a lot in the process to find out that production system. For those doctors, quite onerous, and in fact, the police themselves producing for themselves, they still have a big backlog. It's something that we're looking at from my end to support and augment what systems they have, because they are humane and they can still add value to them. And I think whenever that we can get more produced, we are going to increase supply at our airports, because they can do various things, and we've already learned a lot from the dogs we currently have.
Just to add on, in terms of the different roles, each entity at the airport has got a different role and function. And that is why we have, you know, your local airport security committee that looks at the entire security value chain. So, you know, we'll have the airlines representative, the national intelligence, the South African police agencies, and we meet on a regular basis to look at the entire security system around the airport. If there is an act of unlawful interference, in this instance, a bomb scare, because then it becomes a crime scene, the police has to cordon off the area and respond accordingly. There is an emergency plan in terms of all, you know, aspect of act of unlawful interference, in terms of who's supposed to be playing a particular role for different situations.
To comment on that bomb scenario in Cape Town, where passengers complained tremendously because of lack of coordination. And then I'll speak to the question about who's in charge.
So the chairperson, this particular incident was slightly outside of the standard norm. This person phoned more than once. It actually allowed us to actually identify him at the end of the day, and he was subsequently arrested. And because of the number of calls that he was feeding into the system, more than once, it started impacting on more than one flight. And it so happened that the particular airline, at that stage, they were also changing passengers between two aircraft because they had a problem with the one aircraft. There was a technical issue. And that then created a more complex scenario in terms of the management of it. As Jason said, when we get into to a scenario such as that one, the SAPs then are the competent authority. They take command and control, and they then manage it. And we have all of the stakeholders, airlines, ourselves, everyone in support, and to make sure that we manage that situation best we can on that day on the floor. On each of these events, there are always learning points that allow you then to deal with the next event more effective and more efficient. And I think this particular one was also no exception in that regard. I think there were learning points along that. But that, and I think the member is referring probably to the incident in Cape Town when he speaks of the earlier.
On the last one about who is in charge, the joy about being with the Parliament Subcommittee is that we, as an agency or as agents, we always assume that we are engaging with policymakers. The choice of how the state lays out who plays the role where belongs more to you than to me. I often, as managing director of AXA, take responsibilities for all. And I do so because I'm the land law. But when you read between the lines, actually, SARS can declare any of my states a customs area. Home Affairs can. SAP can. Anybody can. While we are coordinating very well, and we've become smarter and be humble, because by being humble, you allow the other parties to work with you, and as a result, you've got a better outcome for your customers. As we move more and more towards efficiency and become smarter, you realize that, and when we start thinking about how efficient we are, could we have done better from a policy point of view? It may be that the rationality is to think about why other countries have got one. From the time a passenger arrives and they go through the legislative security area, that one uniform. That helps you in terms of your worst nightmare of the crisis because of one boss. We could consider that, but right now it works through coordination. And I think what helps is that we have learned as AFSA that what makes partnerships work is not arrogance and ego. It's your ability to realize that without the various parties, you won't have the right level of output. And so far we've mastered that art. We work with, for example, now you're going to have, we've got a new commissioner for police. We've got new staff commissioner. We've got, with the new parties, we'll sit down with them. We'll engage with each one of them about the journey we've taken, the gaps we see, and work with them because it is only through partnerships. Our model, as it has been legislated by law, gives AFSA a plethora of agents. At times you want to split your hair, I can say that as MD, but you've been hired not to split your hair but to find a solution. And so we spend time understanding the importance of creating a platform for others. Same with baggage. If you were in the EU, I wouldn't be sitting here answering questions on baggage privilege. It would be airlines. But in my country, because I'm the landlady, I will answer all questions, and I will look at resources within my budget to solve the problem. But when you read the law, you realize that this lady has actually no bugger of road. She gives them infrastructure, and everybody uses them, and then she ends up taking the blame. But I think in some ways it depicts who we are as South Africans. We believe that we will work together for the ultimate output for everybody. But I think as we experience it through Parliament and you understand where the blinkers may be and the shortcomings may be, and as legislation evolves, I'm sure that you'll find better ways to increase efficiency. Right now, we make it work. We are learning to create partnerships. It's a good thing for us because it brings their egos down. However, if we want to really refine and stand out in the world on efficiency on those items, the legislators will look at various avenues, and there are key studies to do it. But it works. I just have to make sure that the people that are supposed to chair it are at the last level, and they chair it, and they look at the right thing, and that they're able to seek partnerships. And that's our current model, and we make it work.
What I was trying to establish is that if you've got this local security committee, which I understand has got a whole lot of processes and role players associated, who's the chair of that committee? Because I want to know who communicates then the outcomes of the decisions taken by all those role players. Because that is what my answer is, and I'm trying to get you to answer me, madam. If you are chairing that committee, then surely through the agents that you've now, it's a crime scene, the SAP has taken over the role and function, they would ask you, because you have the mic, so to speak, to announce to those people what the hell's going on. Excuse me. Am I not right? And if not, why isn't it working like that?
That part is at least at a smaller level, where it would take the teams at the airport. For example, in the case that you were referring to, I tend to believe that they had different, because it was a crime scene, they had different police agencies managing the information. Ideally, we would like the chair to be able to manage them and pull them together. But we actually don't say we manage and pull together, we facilitate. And I think we need to move to a stage where we can use the word manage. Because there's nothing in the act saying that they must listen to us, by the way. So we've got to get ourselves to a stage where we manage that process and enable it. So far, it's been facilitation. And that incident showed that we needed to tighten the chairs of my last
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to assist the honourable member as well in terms of the process going forward, and I came in the tail end hearing the MD talk about legislation and going forward in terms of assisting the process. I think one must take our eye off the fact that whilst SMHA, a local committee at the airport, there's still prescribed procedures for different government agencies in particular situations. Now, without going into detail, you know, each situation differs, and yes, each situation is a learning curve in terms of government agencies. That's that you have a board scale every day that you practice every day on these particular issues. These kind of situations are not one that is focused on customer service, but rather in terms of the security of all persons at the airport. So by means of an example, if you have a bomb scare in an aircraft, and I did catch the general manager of the airport saying there's a phone alarm and such, the chances are that the person on board in the aircraft could also be a suspect. So government agencies, you can't handcuff government agencies in a framework and say, customer focus. People need to react. That's why they are there to play the hard-nosed role as such. They're there for a particular purpose of ensuring the security of all persons, and they treat it accordingly. The chief of security, though, I know we have extensive debates on these issues, and he always tells me from a customer service point of view, customer service comes second after safety and security. And we need to take that into cognizance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Related to the last topic which you reported on, the fire and rescue aspect. First of all, I just want to thank you for letting me have access to that information I requested, and I will keep it confidential. But needless to say, the concerns that are raised in terms of the audit of personnel and the concerns that I have in just looking at it in a broad sense, the disposition of the levels of staffing at our various airports is of concern. And I'm a bit worried that it's not actually a concern to you as well. As you're aware, the whole aspect of this issue was brought up in the press. It came into the public domain, in a sense. And it was brought about purely by the fact that there was a general shortage identified of particular skills at different levels of firefighting in our. Now, I'm very pleased to note that you have these assimilation processes every 2 years. But if you look at the broad disposition of your current staffing at all levels, and look at the levels of, say, skills of less than 3 years, you've got a major problem on your hands. A major problem, because you break those up into various shifts, bearing in mind that this is a 24-hour service. We've got to seriously look, and what I was hoping would come out of this report today, was that there would be some proposed training programs and recruitment programs would bring up those levels, irrespective of the compliance that you've indicated to us in your report. But there is a serious shortfall of some of the skills. There definitely is. And I've seen it, and it's been confirmed in the audit by virtue of the various agents been talking to each other and saying, yes, we admit there is a problem here, there's a problem there. So we must admit that. Now, having done that, I want to know then, you know, what is going to happen in this particular area in particular to ensure that we are going to get the right numbers of people for each ship that is going to be operated at each airport, and that we're going to get the right number of skills there. And if you could maybe just give me some assurances about that, I'd be very happy. I think once I've got that sort of general answer, Madam Chair, then I'll just see whether I need to follow up again.
I'm actually pleased to share that the Civil Aviation Authority walked in again because they audit all of our standards and our numbers. And as Managing Director, because I could go to jail on compliance, on safety, I can stand here in front of you and say to you that while we have shortages of personnel in a few areas, they are all being recruited, and that I'm very comfortable that for all of the requirements, I'm actually compliant. The issues that were in the press were quite unfortunate because they have failed to contextualize the scenario under which we operate, and almost alluded to the fact that because we focus on aviation security
and save it in terms of fire and rescue, such that our people put out fires in aircraft when they burn, and they are not necessarily getting a certificate of putting building fires as a normal fire services personnel of the city would be, that therefore AFSA is weak. We have been audited by CAO and by the Civil Aviation Authority, and I'm sure they could comment later. I want to give you the confidence that the recruitment strategy on fire and rescue, which has made the number of people unsettled in the company, is a very robust one. We have looked in other areas of our work to look at areas where we can actually stretch our performance. Fire and rescue is one of those. And in addition to the situation, I would say that the core of the complaint from staff or the particular staff member, from the my own analysis and interviews of all of them, has been the fact that over history, because of maybe the focus on security, because of the incidence of security, we've managed to quickly reposition structurally where security would be, and we needed to reposition fire and rescue similarly. To give you an example, the fire chief in the old structure would report to the manager of airside, because airside is what you protect and you save in aviation. Ideally, the fire chief should report to the GM. In terms of our structure, we have changed that. Their issue is not about numbers. I have the numbers. I have young, qualified people. Yes, the bulk of them might have 3 to 4 year experience, but they are quite experienced. They are under enormous training, more than in any other area. They are around their vehicles every day as required by law. They are being exposed to what they need to be doing every day. And I am confident that my people in AFSA, I have looked at, I've gone across the airport, and we are, besides the fact that we need to reposition them differently within the structure under each GM, I am very confident that with that measure, they would feel that they are at a very senior level with the fire chief than where they have been before. But largely on quality reviews by the Civil Aviation Authority, I think it is up to them to share with you their analysis of their audits and what they believe they have seen and where they believe our shortcomings are. I take that very, very seriously. It will make absolutely the license, and I could actually end up in jail. Like everything else, I try to handle it my woman way, and I deal with it.
Local government plays a major role as well in terms of, you know, the fact that most of your airports sit within the metro's environment. How closely associated are you with them in terms of ensuring some sort of accreditation, call it what you like, and compliance in case of, you know, emergencies and things of that nature? Are you linked to it or not? I mean, just a general question.
We say in AFSA that our airports don't exist in isolation. They're part of the communities where we live. But particularly for our emergency exercises, the law actually requires that you must make sure through those exercises that your local hospitals, your local authorities, for argument's sake, an aircraft crash could happen on the NT, not in the airport itself. The emergencies of the local authority, together with AFSA, must know how to respond in that incident. Local authorities are our key partners. Hence, I spend time personally to augment the work that is done by my general managers to ensure, especially now that we've got new provincial authorities and new city managers and mayors, I do a roadshow around. I go and present to them where we are, where we rely on them, especially when emergency services, just to make sure that among their priorities, they do know the priorities expected of them from the aviation side. They are an important partner to the airport company.
Thank you.
addition to that question that was asked, mine relates to the fact that in 2010 there will be cities that are classified as host cities, and there are cities that are classified as passive venues. The very same question that is being asked, I am posing it now in relation to the state of preparedness, including all the things that you have mentioned in relation to the regional airport that will be utilized by the team. Let's say Team A is camping in Ogo District Municipality, but it has to fly out to Cape Town to play. What is their coordination? Are you talking to those cities?
At this stage, I will confess that the main cities that we have been engaging on directly as I'm at this stage would be the main cities around which our efforts are located. However, as the model and the location of teams gets firmed up and we know where they are going to stay, it is an obligation that from a coordination of timing and understanding what it takes for people to get to the airport, we are going to have to engage with them. What I will do is, and I'm here at least with my colleagues from transport, because they've raised it twice, what I'm going to do, because they had not been in the first priority list, there were going to be points of engagement when we know who stays there. We will work with the Department of Transport. It may be that, because I can see concern in your eyes, that you are right that we should start now. And then I'll see the extent to which I can program within my team's time as part of the planning for 2010 to put those in. And I'm sure that Anwar has also had, just allow me the time to engage with them and reprioritize them because I can see your concern.
I'll urge that you do that because what has happened is that in each province identified cities that would be captive venues and they allocated money for those cities to develop facilities. And then in interacting, because the cities would not just build anything, they had to interact. In our case, in Ogo, we interacted with Portugal, Spain, and all the people, and also with the Department of Sport to try and understand the kind of practicing venue and also to try and understand the needs of the teams. And the issue of the airport is very critical for a team to decide on what to say. The team doesn't decide first before the whole package is there. What influences the team to decide on where to stay? It's not the local organizing committee that decides. It is not FIFA. It is the federation. And in the federation, it is the coach. But the coach decision is informed by the transport infrastructure, the hotel accommodation, the distance from the practicing venue on flight, and the venue where you are actually playing, the safety of that, and the safety also of the practicing venue itself, not the airport and not the road infrastructure. So they are critically looking at the distance from the hotel and the practicing venue, and the distance from the practicing venue's airport to the airport where they will be actually playing, because they would not stay in the cities that are hosting
some would stay in cities that are not hosting, when they are just considering and want to be away. Even when we were playing at Bafana Bafana in Korea, we stayed at a different venue to that of the Bafana Bafana. We were not where Bafana Bafana was because of the issue of the state and also not to disturb them. So that is very, very critical. And I think it should be looked at to begin to interact with the cities and see their state of readiness, as well as the Department of Transport, to look at the road infrastructure and also the issues of safety.
Before I let my colleague from Transport respond, I would like to say our focus on primarily what we're responsible for, I think it's a logical one, but I think more and more when I attend these forums, I realize how the challenge of coordination is going to have to happen. But hopefully, if the Department of Transport wants me to do more, they'll give me some money to afford to do it. Because our model has got the capacity to expand and include others. But I will work with them to make sure that they guide us properly. Right.
Thank you, Chair. I guess for the MD and the AXA, we're in a deficit at the moment. So we have to start from that point, Madam Chair. All right. I think on a more professional note, though, Madam Chair, you've summed it up very well in terms of the problem statement, and it's something that we are dwelling with extensively on a day-to-day basis. Just for the new portfolio committee to understand, the aviation unit, in terms of 2010 preparation, the department has an aviation subsector task team set up for this purpose. Now, the aviation subsector task team deals with all key stakeholders towards building up an operational plan for 2010, of which AXA is part of, but the aviation subject tasking also going to deal with what is primary airports and secondary airports and how it's going to impact in terms of where teams will stay, which secondary airports require additional infrastructure, etc., etc. What we have done is we are engaged in writing now to the FIFA LOC. You have something right as a coach, but the FIFA LOC still is the contact point we have in terms of how we operate the operational plan. And putting them on notice in terms of telling them that the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company, which is the mandated company for the slot coordination in our skies, you know, we only think of an airport on the ground, but we forget we have a whole traffic pattern above us, needs to be managed well, and that there will be capacity constraints in the sky, because for that 8-week period, we're going to basically triple or maybe go 400 times the number of moments we normally have per day in our airspace. And asking the LOC that they must get their teams now to identify the slots. That will give us a very good indication of which municipalities they will want to fly into, where they want to base themselves. And from the airspace, we start managing and saying, fine, this is what we need to do for the particular respective airports. Without that information, we will not be able to plan accordingly because the airspace dictates what happens on the ground, not the ground dictates what happens in the airspace. And that's unfortunately how the industry works. But we would definitely take cue from Madam Chair and accelerate this process with all the stakeholders that we're dealing with and raise the alarm, as you rightfully point out, that we need to start doing it now, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Can I make a further contribution on this? I mentioned that in Ugu, I was the one who was driving the issue of the preparedness for 2010 from the district municipality. The airport is at the Hyderabad coast, the Magid Airport. Now, it is not the LOC, and I want to repeat, it is not the LOC that identifies, that tells the team where to camp. It is the federation that chooses a practice in venue. And the federation chooses that informed by
the airport and its condition, the hotel and its condition, the processing venue and its condition, the road infrastructure and its condition. And at district level, at processing venue level, we battled to get this coordination, particularly around the issue of the airport. All other pieces of that processing venue are in place. The only lagging piece was the airport. Now, if you go to KZN, Boko is far ahead of other municipalities. Reason being, I had an exposure of what was happening in Korea when the World Cup was being prepared for, because I was the chairperson of the portfolio committee here then. That is the advantage Ogo got. Now, if at this level you do not know the state of preparedness in as far as the airport, the regional airport, where the teams will be practicing, what are we then saying to actually then come go and camp there? Because they will go there because we have all their, all what they need. That's all I am saying, is that it. It's not the LOC, it is the country, and it is not the LOC that decides for the Federation. The Federation decides because all the needs of the Federation are catered for in a particular area that has been identified as a capital. Then the last thing, which then means that maybe at some point there will be a need to revisit this issue together with the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation and ourselves, and also the representatives of the LOC and also the coordinating team in the provinces, because provinces are marketing, are marketing themselves separately. It's not a national marketing approach. It is a provincial marketing approach targeting teams. And that marketing strategy requires the readiness of the airport. And in some situations, there is no knowledge of one. Who is going to do what, when, what are the requirements, and all these things. Can I then bring this meeting to the end, because a lot has been covered. And there are just a few things that I would want us to look at, even maybe if it is not today, but they are very important for me. One issue is the experience during the Confederation Cup of Nations. Many flights were overbooked, and the people that were prioritized in booking to us were those that were. Remember, on one weekend during the Confederation, there was also a rugby event, resulting with overbooking, and then the movement of the ordinary people that usually utilize the flight was negatively affected, as well as the regular travelers were finding it difficult to book, including ourselves. Some of the meetings had to start very, very late, because we could not get seats. There were no seats available. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration
during the 2010 World Cup that there are regular travelers who would not be going to the team, and there are regular travelers also, and find a way. Maybe your plan talks to that, but we have not gone to it today. Maybe we'll have to revisit that at some time. The other issue to me is the involvement of the South African Airways crew members on drug trafficking. Not from the criminal and legal aspect of how you deal with it when it has happened, or the technology, but the mindset now, because it's a very embarrassing situation for the country, which maybe requires a campaign of some sort to actually indicate what happens to the entire country as a result of a few individuals who are also in the employment of a government-owned entity. I don't also think that if it is a campaign that aims to change the mindset, it would be a campaign that requires only youth to work on it. It also requires members of the community to take responsibility and ensure that we understand the negative impact on the country of such action. The other one is related to the fact that South Africa is two worlds in one. There's a first world and a third world in South Africa. And I am from the third world, but I have graduated to the first world. And I don't think that I'm the only one that would want to shorten the traveling time from Johannesburg to Harbin. I think there are many people that who live in Harding and other places like Harding and rural areas that would want to shorten the traveling time and, if possible, use a flight. Now, we have cheaper airlines in South Africa who are using the same routes that are used by the expensive airlines, which means that the cheaper airline does not service the poor person. And there are regional airports that are underutilized, like the market airport that we are talking about. It can only accommodate Air Link, the small craft. And I don't want to believe that a person who travels from Johannesburg using a bus, eating food all the way, 6 hours, and then from Durban, 1.5 hours to Harare, would want to spend that kind of time, amount of time, if there was an option of having a cheaper airline that lands in market. I am now talking the socio-economic transformation. And at some stage, we will need to revisit this and say, is it productive and sustainable to have regional airlines that can only be used by the smaller aircraft, when we have a movement now of people, even from the rural areas, wanting to go and do this? People, some register their companies in Pretoria and do all sorts of things. They buy products, they sell, and they want to move faster. The time
is now the center, which means shortening time and also making all modes of transport accessible to all the people of South Africa. The last one is related to how does ACSA, we're not asking you to respond today because you will be related today. How does ACSA relate to and implement government policies that are aimed at improving the social economic conditions of the poor? And the policies that we're looking at when we ask that question is the broad-based black economic empowerment, cooperative development, are all services that are provided to ACSA from companies. What about cooperatives and what policies, what percentage of services is actually sourced from our cooperatives? What percentage of services is targeting the broad-based black economic empowerment group? And when we do that, we will be narrowing the gap between the first and the second economy. We have not asked you to make a presentation today in relation to that. But these are very key policies for transformation in this country, social transformation and economic transformation. And when we engage next time, we would want to see how ACSA leads to socioeconomic improvement and how do you implement these policies that we have talked about. And the last thing is, you have said that we heard you very clearly. You said there is a challenge of the aviation fuel shortage, and that needs to be looked at. And how we can facilitate that situation from our side is that we could facilitate a joint statement of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, because you report to transport, with the Portfolio Committee on Energy, so that we allow a situation where you can talk about this challenge and then the two committees have a common understanding and agree on how they are going to facilitate an intervention and sensitize Parliament and also sensitize the two ministries that there is this challenge so that a solution could be found. And we are committing ourselves to facilitating that. We are also asking you to bring to our attention any challenge that you may be facing that would require an intervention that you cannot facilitate on your own, and you require support from our side. I would then like to take this opportunity again and thank you for availing yourself and also for a well-structured presentation and the way you have responded to our questions and also to the suggestions. I very much observed the body language, and the body language was more cooperation than we hear, but doesn't mean anything to us. And I want to thank you for that. Your body language, the way you responded, and also the body language is a cooperative kind of an attitude. And also I would like to thank the committee, the members of the committee,
because in their questions also, they were not fighting with you. They were raising issues and making suggestions and wanting clarity when issues were not clear, because we are not here to fight each other. We are here to assist each other and help this country move forward. Thank you very much. Yes, the meeting is adjourned, and the first part of the meeting, and then the committee will have a break, then after we will go to the workshop. Thank you very much.